Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with Shirley Bauman, auctioneer and certified appraiser, as we visit with her today about appraisals, about antiques and auctions, and certainly inviting your questions about those areas as we move along today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. And you can email us as well, and email us at talk@wpr.org. And Shirley, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's funny, you and I were talking before the show. I have a guest coming up. Kevin Revelinsky is going to be talking at 11:45 about Wisconsin's best beer. And you mentioned that you once auctioned off a beer can for $875.
$875, and it was an empty can.
And a Beaver Dam
Brewery. It was called Ziegler's, and the brewery was defunct, and this can was made, and it was made probably about 70, 80 years ago. Well, at least that now, because the auction was a little while back. And it was a cone top can, which, you know, is an aluminum can, but it has, or sometimes steel cans, but it has the cone top, so it actually can have a cap on the top.
Yeah.
And this can was made, and the brewery went defunct, and so it was never used, so it was absolutely perfect. And it went to a dealer from the Chicago area, and the big Breweriana show was coming up, so I know the ultimate collector will have paid even more for it.
Oh, boy. Well, we can talk about beer cans, but there's lots of other things we can talk about as well. Let's go to Leah in Lake Geneva. Leah, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was wondering about selling some 20th century artwork, mostly watercolors from regional artists, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of a hard market at this point for selling art because of the economy. And, of course, finding the buyers. Now, if you have something special, the people with money are still buying. But the Wisconsin regional artists, the buyers are not always that easy to find or that have the money to spend that you'd really like to get for something like that. Do you know who the artists are?
There are various ones that I've collected over the years, you know, mostly sold at art fairs, that kind of thing.
Okay, so it's more what we call contemporary made.
Right.
You know, if any of them have become well known in particular areas, you might sell them to the local museums. Mm-hmm. There's a Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend, if any of them have become well known. There's also the local historical societies might want an artist from their area, a work of an artist from their area. Otherwise, you know, you can sell them at auction, but unless the artist is very well known, they aren't going to bring a lot of money.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Are there ever any specialty auctions where it's nothing but artwork, sculpture, paintings, that sort of thing?
Oh, yes, there are. There's a lot of them, and the bigger the auction house, the more likely they are to have them. And I think around here, the closest ones I know of are in Iowa. Well,
probably Chicago.
And Chicago. I was trying to think the name. James Jackson in Iowa does some of them, and, you know, the Chicago auction houses.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Eugene in Viola, on to you. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning, Larry.
Morning.
I've got a shoeshine stand, and I've always been curious about it. I've looked on the internet, and I can't find anything. It's one of these small town barbershop shoeshine stands. Stands about 3.5 feet long, about 2 feet wide, and about 2 feet high. And it's got cast iron footrests out on the front. Now, during the season, I do about 10 or 12 historical events with it. And I haven't been able to find anything else out about it. And also, and that's another thing, I don't know what appraisal on it is. I have no ideas. But the only thing, I wrote the Smithsonian about it, and they said it was probably homemade, and I don't think so. Hmm. I think it was factory made, maybe by a furniture company. That's all I can come up with.
Mm-hmm. There's no mark on it at all.
There's no marks. I loaned it out one summer many years ago. I bought it in 1954 from the barbershop.
Mm-hmm.
And it was painted over at one time. There were some numbers on the back, but there weren't any there weren't any marks outside of that. And it's got a fancy, I got the fancy armchair to go with it, pretty much. But I know, I've seen footrests like the ones I've got on the internet. By the time I got around to them, they were gone.
Well,
I have, like I said, I have no ideas. I do about three of them down around Chicago, and I do the rest, 8 or 9 or 10, here in Wisconsin during the season.
Well, it's hard to say exactly without seeing it, but being cast iron, like you mentioned, is that correct? It was footrest. It's probably real early 20th century.
I think I traced it back to about 1880 or 1890. There's a lady up here in
right
town. She
that.
Said her husband's uncle used it when he was a kid, and she's in her middle 80s right now.
Yeah, so that, yeah, that would make sense between that.
But I have no idea on appraisal on anything on it whatsoever.
That's something I don't know off the top of my head, and I would have to do a little bit of research on that as well. And if you do see some on the internet, that's really where I'd go. I'd go to, if you go to eBay and you have to have an account, which doesn't cost you anything to just to register, and then go down on the left-hand side to completed sales and see if you can find some. And then there are other databases, and of course I subscribe to some of these that a lot of people might not subscribe to because of the cost that tells you, you know, auction results for all kinds of things.
Yeah. That stand is a lot of fun during the summer. I don't make any money at it, but sure is.
I'm sure it is fun, and it's great that you use it as kind of a learning tool for people.
And I've gotten the guy's gotten down a few times that here's an extra dollar. A story was worth it.
Good.
Good luck with it, Eugene. Thanks
Thank
a lot
you.
For calling. All right, Shoeshine Stand. Let's go to Jim in Madison, see what Jim's got. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. How are you doing, Larry?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Well, I appreciate having this opportunity.
What do you have for us?
Well, I have what I think is a Japanese temple gong, about 11 inches high and 13 inches across. It's black, and I think it's brass. And the Japanese student who lived with us for a while translated the four inscriptions around the top edge of it, and said that it might have been made in the year of Heisei, which is 1648. And I don't know. I'd like to authenticate that if it's that old. I'll give you a sample.
Sounds great. Sounds great. The authentication is the important part on that first. That's the first thing to do. Because, of course, if somebody brings something that like that to me, I don't read the language. So I couldn't do that, so I'd have to help find someone who could.
Sure.
And one of the ways to do that is to find museums that carry Asian arts.
Oh.
And they will usually be able to help either translate that for you and or help you. The Chicago Art Museum does that for, you know, for a fee.
Yeah.
And they do that. I also, through my professional organization, am acquainted with a professor of Asian arts in Florida. And I call on her when I need help with that. So she is not only the Asian art professor, she's also a certified appraiser. So she is well situated to do that kind of thing. So that's what you need to do first, is actually find out if it really is that period. And then an Asian art specialist. And there actually is a gentleman in the Milwaukee area. And if you go onto the website for the Antiques Roadshow, he does Asian arts, he might be able to give you some help as well. And he is an appraiser. Sokolo is his last name. And
what's his last name?
Sokolo, Sokolow, Sokolo, and that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he may be able to help you with an authentication or finding an authenticator for you as well.
All right.
And any possibility of connecting with your Florida person?
If you go to my website and get in touch with me off the air, we can talk about that.
Okay. And so the... And that would be to Bauman Auction? No, that would be to
Heirloom Appraisal.
Heirloomappraisal.com. Heirloomappraisal.com. Okay. Good luck. Thanks, Jim, for calling. Appreciate it. Dennis in Let's see, Sister Bay, I believe. Dennis, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry and Ms. Bauman. What a glorious way to celebrate the advent of the electric light bulb. What piqued my wife's and my interest was to begin to purchase reverse-painted shade lamps as well as panel glass lamps. We have quite a collection. There were old-timers, and none of our children want them. We're thinking about getting rid of our collection, and we want to know how best to do that.
Well, there are a couple ways you can do that. I would think those lamps would be wonderful sold at auction. Since you have a collection, it will bring collectors. And these days we use the Internet as well. And so people start either coming or calling and asking for more photographs and that kind of thing. And we do a lot of auctions. A lot of our things go to different parts of the country. Mm-hmm. Last auction I had bidders from the Cincinnati Art Museum who came up, and they saw it on the Internet. So you do get a big, broad range of people now through auctions. These lamps are popular. I assume some of them have some of the famous names.
Well, yes, several do. One's mm-hmm. a Miller, and right. I don't remember the others.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so since you say you have a collection of them,
yes.
That's what brings people. When there's one or two, there'll be people who come for it, but a whole collection would be, you know, something people would come further for. And, you know, combining that, auctioneers who do antiques auctions can combine that with some other things that will enhance it, that will fit together. You know, you wouldn't put that on the hay wagon on the farm, but
no.
You'd put that with other antiques, and it would be a good draw at auction, I believe.
What would be a good locale for such an auction? Would it be at your facility, or?
Well, I'd like to say yes to that, of course. I could auction those, and I do work with other auctioneers as well that maybe we have things that would combine with it really well. I'm working with an auctioneer out of the Conemaugh area now, and we're putting some things together because we have a grouping of ladies' things, some jewelry, and one of mm-hmm. us has handbags and that kind of thing and some fine things. So, yeah, we work mm-hmm. together. If you want to give me contact me again off the air, I can talk to you more about if you'd want to auction them through my company.
Okay, and I can just go to your website and
Bauman,
find out more information then.
Yeah, Bauman Auctions, and it's Bauman with two N's, BaumanAuctions.com?
That's right.
Yeah, Bauman
okay.
Auctions. All right, thanks
Thank
a
you.
Lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Kevin in Rhinelander. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I've been tossing around trying to start up a consignment auction house, and I was just wondering what your thoughts or advice are. And if those auction schools you see advertised, are they worth actually attending?
All right.
Oh, I can definitely speak to that.
Yeah.
I went to the Missouri Auction School, and it was very well worth it. And there are some that are closer. There's one in Iowa, and there's in Ohio, and they are good places to go. What you do at auction school is, well, the hook is you learn the chant.
Mm-hmm.
And every morning we started our class by counting backwards and forwards, up and downs, by halves and fives and 2.5, 5, 7.5, 10, and all that kind of thing. And then they started out with the chant. You know, the numbers have to come natural to be an auctioneer that does a chant like that. So that's one of the things we did in tongue twisters. But then we spent a lot of time on the business end of it. How you write contracts with people and... What, you know, how do you get your merchandise? And what about doing a commercial auction versus real estate auction versus personal property auctions? We went through all that kind of thing, and it was definitely well worth it. I couldn't have started my business without that information. And that gives you a good basis to come back then and take your state licensing exam. If you're going to be the auctioneer, you have to take the auctioneer's license. If you're going to be an auction company and hire a contract auctioneer, then you have to get the state auction company license. Consignment auctions are an interesting animal. When I started the business, I did 2 years straight of monthly consignment auctions. And they were a great thing to do then because I got a lot of experience. But I don't do them much anymore because they're a lot of work in terms of... You'll have to do a lot of paperwork, more than if you've got one party.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have to get different merchandise and provide storage if you're getting things at different times to build up an auction, or to bring it in and out all in one day. If you don't have your own auction house, if you're renting a facility, you bring it all in and out in that one day, including your office.
Yeah.
And a consignment, if you're having it every week or every month, it makes a big difference. You know, I rented a facility and did it every month. If you do it every week and you have your own facility, it becomes much more
easier,
manageable,
yeah.
Right, because you can get hire staff that'll work with you. When I only had them monthly, I had to do part-time, very part-time staff, and that always gets difficult as well. So you've got the staffing and, you know, all the supplies and all of that, but the key to really being successful is watching what you get in terms of the merchandise, because a lot of people will try to kind of unload their things on you this way.
Mm-hmm.
So in this day and age, especially, it's the quality of the merchandise that makes the auction. The days are gone when people will go out even to an estate auction and spend all day to buy household goods and pots and pans and those kinds of things. People don't have time for that. They will come for good merchandise. And so if you're doing antique auctions or whatever, you know, just be sure that what you're getting in is quality merchandise that people will come for, because otherwise, you know, you'll be struggling.
Okay. Good tips. Thanks a lot, Kevin, for calling. Appreciate your call. Shirley Bauman, auctioneer and certified appraiser, our guest here as we talk antiques, appraisals, and auctions. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Shirley Bauman visiting with us today about antiques, appraisals, and auctions. Let's turn to Barb in Little Suamico next. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Larry.
Yes, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Oh, Larry, I love listening to you and Shirley, and this is the first time I've been able to get through, and I've been watching the show American Pickers and thinking to myself, boy, I wish there was someone in the area who would show up at our house and let us know what we have and help us figure out, you know, how we can go about downsizing from a lifetime of acquiring stuff. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. My phone's beeping, so I think I'm going to lose you pretty quick. But if I do, I'll just listen off the air. We don't have a collection of anything. We just have wonderful little bits and pieces of things that came down from our grandparents and things like that. And how do you go about finding someone you can trust to come in and tell you if you've got something valuable, or if you just might as well just give it all to Goodwill?
Mm-hmm. Yep. A lot of people struggle with that, and what I would suggest is finding someone in the area who's either certified and or accredited as an appraiser, and you can usually find that out through the internet. The main appraisal associations, again, are the International Society of Appraisers, Appraisers Association of America, or the American Society of Appraisers. But there's also auctioneers in the area who might have taken the appraisal course through, you know, one of the auction schools or through the National Auctioneers Association if you don't have that kind of appraiser. And they could come in and help you with that. If you look in some of the auction ads, you'll find auctioneers in the yellow pages or whatever. You will find that they say that they are appraisers certified and such. And in your local area, you usually know, or you can find out pretty easily by talking to people who the most respected or reputable auctioneers in the area are as well.
Well, the biggest trouble that we tend to run across up here is we're in northern Wisconsin, and resources tend to be very few and far between, and travel time involved and stuff, you usually get charged for somebody to come in and help you with this, and if you end up finding out that your stuff...
Yeah, we lost you, but I know that where you were going with it. You get charged for this service, and then you find out your things really aren't worth anything. And that's true. And the thing is, the auctioneers, the appraisers, this is their business. And they can't really go out and do their work for free because, you know, we get trained, we have costs, we have insurance, we have continuing education and all of that. And so, of course, we have to do that for our business. And if you are interested in auctioning it and an auctioneer takes your you have things that they take for auction, then you usually, of course, recover that. And the fact of the matter is, are you willing to take a chance? Either you have to do your own research and really buckle down and learn about the things you have, or you have to bring somebody in. And either way, it's going to cost you in the time or probably the money.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you mentioned the American Pickers show. I was just interviewed for the show and taped very recently. It should air probably late August. I don't have a date yet. But they spent 2 weeks in Wisconsin and Michigan. And so they stopped by my office and did a little segment with me.
And that show is about, for those who don't know the show,
it's on the History Channel. And two fellas they have an Iowa antique shop, and they go around trying to pick antiques to find them in unlikely places sometimes. They go to farms and homes and houses, and they bring things in, and then they come to somebody like me and say, hey, how did we do when we picked this one up?
Okay. All right, Barb, I'm sorry we lost you there, but I think you got the information you need. Thank you for calling. Dave and Augusta, on to you now. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Larry. Hey, we bought our old farmhouse here a number of years ago, and in the attic there were just a lot of stuff from the families who had lived there before. And in one of the trunks, I found what I believe is a pair of World War One army pants.
Okay.
I don't know anything about them. Except for that they're very clean and they're very short. This person that wore these in the war wasn't very tall. It has U.S. Army buttons on the front, and then on each leg, maybe three or four or five going down on the outside of each leg where it meets the boot. Now, I've gone on eBay, and I've looked. I've kind of got a range of what it might be worth, but I was wondering if you had any knowledge of that.
Well, you've probably got as much as I do if you've gone eBay and seen what people are pricing them for. And right now, I don't think they're... What are you finding out on eBay?
I'm finding that there's a couple listed. They're going for $30 to $35.
Yeah,
that's
about what I was going to say. Clothing from that period, especially the pants... You know, of course, somebody can't fit into them. The people who want them are collectors, maybe, who are putting on museums or historical events where they want to have a mannequin wearing the uniform or something. And they're possibly short because they were wearing spats with it.
Right. Unfortunately, I don't have the top coat, which if I had the top coat matching the pants...
Yes. Makes it,
that'd be a find, yeah.
Yeah, makes it much more valuable. World War One. All the wars are collectible items from all the wars. The Civil War is the most collected and most valuable. Now, if you had Civil War clothing, that'd be much more valuable than either of the World Wars. So that's what the collectors are after. Good condition is always important. So you said they were in good condition, which is great. And even for those who have pants or jackets that are in horrible condition, the buttons themselves have some value.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Sure. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We got Brad emailed us from Minnesota and said, I recently came across a letter from J. Edgar Hoover to my great-grandmother in my grandmother's closet, and it was about her inquiry about a missing relative. Any value to something like that? I'm sure he would have been the FBI director at the time.
Yeah. There is definitely some value to that. And the fact that it was about a missing person when he was working in the field of the FBI on missing persons and the kinds of things the FBI did, it was about his business. It wasn't about,
thank you for writing.
Right. Thank you for writing or renting an apartment or something like that. It was about what he did. And so that adds to its value. Exactly what Hoover's signature and the letter is worth, and the fact that you know who it's worth or who it was about and who it was to is provenance. And that helps because you know that she wrote and got this letter back. And so that's helpful as well. I am not familiar with the value of that letter and his signature specifically. I would say it might be in the, my guess here, and you know, when we do unresearched work, it's just mm-hmm. that, it's an educated guess. I'm thinking it could possibly be in about the $200 to $250 range if the letter is in really good condition, if it's actually signed in its own hand, that, for example, a secretary didn't sign for him. Mm-hmm. And that, again, goes back to authentication. It's looking at his signature that we know is authentic and comparing this one to make sure it's in the same hand. And do you know the date of that letter?
Let's see. I don't think the
date.
He didn't have that in
He's
the email.
Here, huh?
Yeah, didn't have that.
It wasn't until Kennedy's presidency that the auto pen came into use commonly. And that's where.
So the 60s.
Yeah, right. Where the person would sign their name and then this pen would sign automatically just the same signature. But that's not considered a personal signature because it's mechanical. So that's something you have to look at is the date as well.
Let's turn to Nancy in Milwaukee next. Nancy, hello to you.
Hello. I'm calling to discuss a child's cast iron sewing machine, which I think dates back from the 1800s. It has the original paint and a very elaborate gold trimming on the paint. It has a handle that turns instead of course, operating electrically, which wouldn't have been available then. And I'm just wondering, is there a high demand or any demand at all for people perhaps wanting
yes.
Sewing machines?
Yes, there is. It's a toy. It's considered a toy, and there is a market for antique toys. And it sounds like you have a nice one, and if the paint and the decal are all in good condition, and the sewing machine, the crank works, and it actually, the needle goes up and down and things,
mm-hmm.
You can be in the range of $100, give or take.
That's good to know.
Yeah, and people do collect them. You see them in the antique shops. If you start going around, I think you'll notice some, and we do see them coming up at auction.
Is there any demand at all for a full-size antique sewing machine? I have a treadle sewing machine made by a company called White, which is in perfect condition. I bought it actually to use as a decorative object, but I'm a very senior citizen now, and I'm trying to get unthinged. And the sewing machine, which weighs a ton, of course, is something I'd like to dispose of.
Well,
is there any demand at all for an adult-size sewing machine?
I think you have more demand for the toy sewing machine than the large one.
Mm-hmm.
Partly for the reason you said, they're large, they're heavy. People don't use them anymore particularly.
Oh, no, I'm sure
you
not.
Know? And so sometimes they, you know, you can't, there's really ornate cabinets sometimes make them sell for maybe up into the $100 or so range, give or take. But a lot of times when you see them up at an auction, we don't even get a bid or we get very low bids on them, $25 or something, because people don't want to bother lifting it and don't have much use for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, this one has very elaborately carved fronts of the drawers.
Yeah.
So that's what attracted me to buy it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I thank you for your information.
All right. Thanks for calling. Phyllis in Madison, your turn. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi.
What have you got for
well,
us?
Well, I have a portrait of Lincoln, just the shoulders and head, and it's number 6 of 100, and the artist is Jules, and I think that is the person who did the Lincoln Memorial, Jules.
Jules.
And I wonder if you know anything about this.
I don't know off the top of my head if that Jules did the memorial, and I don't know that name as an artist. In artwork, it's the kind of thing that we have to look up artists a lot because there's just so many, and if I'd look it up, there very well might be 12 artists with the last name Jules. And so we'd have to figure out which one it was. And you talked about that it was numbered, which probably means it's a print.
Right.
Not an original.
No.
And that would make a difference in its value, of course. It's one of however many were done.
100, yeah.
And so I can't really tell you if it's the same person without some research. But just to, if you have access to the internet, just Google Jules Portrait Artist and see what you can find out.
Maybe Ed Lincoln.
Ed Lincoln, yeah.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Give it a try. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Here's another email from Susan, who has a dining set table with two self-storing leaves of five straight chairs and a chair with arms and a matching buffet, two side doors with two shelves and four drawers, inherited it from her aunt, who was married in the 1940s. I think the finish is cherry veneer. It's well-maintained. How do you get someone to appraise a dining set like she says, I have limited information on the internet. I'd like to sell it, but would like a fair price.
Sure. And we all would like that when we sell our things. There's a couple of ways, again, like I mentioned before, finding someone in your area who has that experience. Sometimes there are, if you go to the local antique malls or shops, they have people that they know are knowledgeable. And if what they're doing for you is giving you a verbal approximation, I have no problem with that. The certification and the accreditation for appraisers is really necessary when you're doing things for official purposes, such as estates or the courts, a charitable donation for the IRS, that kind of thing. You really need to have someone, insurance. But if you're trying to get a verbal approximation, you could, like I say, find that auctioneer, find that antique dealer in the local area that's knowledgeable, and they could probably help you with it. I will say, in general, right now, the furniture market is soft, which means we're getting low prices for most furniture right now. Mm. It just hasn't picked up much at all. The I guess the mid-century items from the, again, famous designer are going a little bit better. But
for the most part, not very good.
It's not very good market right now for furniture.
Carol has a question about ivory. Where could I get a piece appraised? Not so much appraised as just checking out to see if it's real ivory. And is there any danger of having it confiscated if it is not old?
Well, we'll take that first question. You need to find someone who can look at it. What they will do is magnify it. And when we're looking at ivory, what we look for is the concentric rings, because it was a living thing.
Sure.
And it looks somewhat like the rings in a tree. Now, if you see little black dots in it when you magnify it, then it's most likely bone, and those were the capillaries that you see in the bone. In terms of the confiscation, it depends on where you got it, when you got it. If it's modern, you couldn't sell it at this point, can you? I wouldn't be confiscating it if it came to me.
No.
So I don't think that's probably an issue, but again, I'd have to double check locally, and I'm not sure if she's Wisconsin or
I think she,
where
yeah,
she's
it's hard
in.
To say.
So,
all right, there we have it. Let's turn to Al in Westby. Al, hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
A question on gas station memorabilia, porcelain enamel signs. Is the market? How is the market if you're looking to buy and sell? And I think it is true that a large sign is less desirable just because of the size it takes to store that, display it?
Well, that's correct. And, of course, it all depends on who you're working with. If you're working with someone who's putting together an automobile museum, they'd like a large sign probably. But for generally speaking, yes, a little smaller sign is more desirable. Those porcelain ones, and Petroliana is really the category we're talking about here, they are desirable. Again, condition is really important. We don't want to see those with rust too much. Of course, you want to see it with a little bit of wear and things, because otherwise someone will say, well, it looks too new to be authentic.
You're right.
But yes, we see them a lot of times in, maybe just about 2 or 3 feet long, going in the, $100 to $200 range, depending on how rare the company is or how well-known the company is, and maybe if this was way early in the beginning when they were starting, it might go a little bit higher, or if it's local and you're selling it in that local market, you might be getting prices up, but they are definitely desirable. And if you're looking to buy and sell, and that's a hobby of yours, I think you've got a good topic there.
eBay a good source to sell, or would you look somewhere else for?
You know, if you had a number of them, I would try some different venues. I'd try eBay. I'd try some local auctions where they're selling that kind of collectible, maybe a specialty auction of just Petroliana items. You know, give it a try and see which way it works best.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So, good program coming up too, Larry.
Yeah, we've got beer coming up. Mm-hmm. Beer coming up next year. But we've got Jim in Dubuque, Iowa, who has a question. So let's go to Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I have a couple of four-piece full sets of Homer Laughlin Virginia Rose china, plus a lot of the accessory dishes and things, and I was just looking to see if they were worth any money, or if I should not sell them and hang on to them, or what, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Homer Laughlin is one of the biggest producers of American dinnerware, and they're in Ohio, and actually 2 years ago I was able to actually go through the factory. So they're still in production out there. And they were made a lot of the dinnerware in the, you know, 30s and 40s. You'll see a lot of people who had those for their wedding china and that kind of thing. Value on dinnerware is an interesting thing right now. A lot of people aren't entertaining the way they used to with fine china. And while this isn't like bone china, it's still a set that I assume, in your case as well as the case that I have, my set from the grandmother, you can't put it in the dishwasher. It's, you know, you have to hand wash it, and people just aren't allotting that much space in their home for the 12 pieces, you know, 12 place settings and all those serving pieces. There's usually two, three, maybe four platters and serving bowls and gravy boats and salt and peppers and cream and sugar, and they just aren't doing that kind of entertaining anymore. So if we were insuring it, we would insure it for replacement value, which then is reasonably high cost, but when we try to sell these kinds of sets, we're not getting much money for them because, same as you, you're getting rid of it because you're not using it. It's taking up too much room, the same kind of thing. It doesn't go in the dishwasher. Mm-hmm. So it's a hard thing for selling those pieces right now. I would say if it has any meaning to you, keep a hold of it right now. And the serving pieces will always be more valuable than the place settings.
Okay, there you have it. Thank you very much for calling. And Shirley, thank you so much. Again, you have two websites, and let's give those again. It's Bauman Auctions, and Bauman is with two N's, right. BaumanAuctions.com, and the other, HeirloomAppraisal.com.
That's correct, and it was my pleasure to be here, and thanks to everyone who called with their questions.
Thank you, Shirley. Shirley Bauman, we'll have her back, and we will meet with her again. But excuse me, coming up, we're going to be talking about beer, Wisconsin beers, with Kevin Revolinsky, next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.